Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, March the 30th. And right now it's 50 degrees here in North Texas. It's supposed to drop to the high 30s by the time we wake up Sunday morning. So this is a bit of a return, you might say, for at least 24 or 48 hours. A return more to winter than to spring. We were having some beautiful spring days, and all of a sudden, well, we're getting a little cold front, as they like to say. But it's okay. It's okay. We just put on a sweater and go outside, and life goes on. Well, today we'll be talking about Vice President Biden, who has apparently been hit by a story from a woman named Lucy Flores. It's a bit hilarious, actually, what she's alleging. So we'll be talking about that. And also remember a couple of big things that happened on this day in history: the assassination attempt on President Reagan in 1981, and Alaska. This was the day that we purchased Alaska from the Russians back in 1867. Let me begin with the border, because interesting situation on the border. The man who was the Department of Homeland Security head under President Obama, I think his last name is Johnston, if I remember correctly. Well, Mr. Johnston is clearly saying that there's a problem on the border. I don't want to say too much more because I don't have the quote in front of me, but I think I am correct to say that he is saying that there's a crisis on the border, that there's a lot of people coming in at numbers that are taxing the ability of the border to be contained. I mean, look, we have to have a border. This idea that anybody can come in whenever they want to is simply insane. And I just find it hysterical that the Democrats are so afraid of calling it a crisis. It's almost like if Trump says one thing, they have to take the exact opposite. And I just don't think this is going to work for the Democrats, because at some point, somebody in the Democrat side is going to have to see what the rest of us are seeing it and calling it what has to be called, and that is a crisis on the border. There is a humanitarian crisis. There is a money crisis, because this is all costing money at the end of the day to the federal government. You cannot continue to absorb these expenses on the border. So now President Trump is talking about closing the border. I think that would be a really hard action to take, because it would have tremendous economic impact on lots and lots of people. But at the same time, you know, you have to somehow make the message to Mexico. Mexico has got to be told that you cannot allow people to go through your country whose purpose it is to get into the United States. Now, if Mexico wants to accept these people, offer them residency, if Mexico wants to keep these people, that's their decision. They can do whatever they want. They're a sovereign country, after all. But we also have a right to say, hey, this is our border, and if you're all these people are coming through Mexico to the United States, and Mexico has a responsibility to stop them and either give them residency in Mexico or send them back to their country. And Mexico, it's not real clear to me what Mexico is doing at this point, because they've always had a very tough history when it comes to illegal immigration. And all of a sudden, why they're letting these people go through, it's not quite clear to me as to why they're doing it, because I don't see how this is beneficial for Mexico to have all these people go through. So again, I would rather not see the president close the border, but it may come to that. It may come to that. It may come to a point where, you know, we got to do something dramatic, because this situation on the border can simply not continue. Well, we remember today, back in 1981, it was about this time in the early afternoon, that we got the news that President Reagan had been shot in Washington, D.C. He was coming out of a lunch engagement where he had spoken, and as he was walking out to the car, I'm sure you've seen the video, he was shot, he was rushed to the hospital, he made it, he survived, but again, you know, he came very close to dying, as we now know, and, you know, he was 70 years old when he was hit by the bullet, so obviously, you know, this had a physical and, let's say, emotional impact on his life. But to me, you know, I remember the moment when this happened. I was having lunch, and I came back to the office, and I had a phone call from my mother telling me that Reagan had been shot, and I, you know, turned on TV, the TV, like many people, actually the radio in my case, because I didn't have a TV at the time, in my office, and I was listening to American Forces Radio because I was in Mexico City when this happened, and I was listening to American Forces Radio and catching on many on up here. And, you know, later that night, I did watch the television. I remember watching the news conference by his doctors. And yes, I mean, President Reagan, in retrospect, almost died that day. I mean, the bullet was that close to his heart. But he survived thanks to great medical attention as well as his own physical stamina. He was a very healthy 70-year-old, I'll put it that way, when he was shot. He survived and, you know, went on to serve two terms of the most successful presidency, I think, in recent years. But, you know, at the moment, you know, I have to tell you this, that at the moment when I heard that President Reagan had been shot, my initial thought at the moment after, you know, the initial shock that he had been shot, my initial thought at the moment was, well, okay, if he was killed, we have a very capable man in George Bush who would take over. And that was the thought that I had, that we had a very capable man in George Bush if, in fact, President Reagan would not survive the shooting. But it's hard to believe 38 years ago that this happened, the late and great President Reagan, who was shot on this day in 1981. Man, it's hard to believe that was 38 years ago. It seems like it's only yesterday. Where did 38 years go? That's the amazing thing about time. 38 years ago. Can you believe that? 38 years ago. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Gibbs, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Gibbs Harpist. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlo's website right there on the show information under the show description. You'll be able to see it. You know, something else that happened on this day back in 1867, and just to put that date in perspective, that would have been roughly 2 years after the end of the Civil War. It was about 2 years after the assassination of President Lincoln, and that was the purchase of Alaska. On this day in 1867, the United States purchased Alaska from Russia. At the time, it was seen as an extremely stupid idea. The president at the moment was Andrew Johnson, who was the vice president who succeeded President Lincoln when he was assassinated. The Secretary of State was William Stewart, Seward, who, you know, most people thought this was a crazy purchase. Most people thought this was a waste of time, that this was a completely stupid thing to do. And yet, over time, you know, think back at this decision for a second. Imagine that Alaska had been a Soviet republic, let's say during the Cold War, that Alaska had been a part of Russia or then the Soviet Union in the 20th century. You would have had, in the very top of North America, the Soviet Union would have been sitting up there on top of North America. They would have had military bases up there. There would have been nuclear missiles, I'm sure, pointing at the United States. There would have been Soviet planes flying over North America. And it would have been a tremendous advantage for the Soviets when you just think about the military position, the strategic position of Alaska. And then on top of that, now that we have oil in Alaska, think of that advantage for Russia today or for the Soviet Union to have had that source of oil up in Alaska. So what was criticized back in 1867, everybody thought that we were just buying a piece of ice on top of North America, in retrospect became an incredible decision because, as I said, just think about what it would be like. Alaska had been part of the Soviet Union. If Alaska had been the Alaska Soviet Socialist Republic, as many of the other parts of the Soviet Union were known back then. So yes, it may have seemed like a foolish decision in 1867, but it certainly became one of the most important pieces of real estate if you just think about the oil that is sitting up there in Alaska and the military and strategic location of having that territory on top of the world. I mean, you're sitting up there and you have, you know, control of the Pacific Ocean. You have control of, I mean, you've got your eyes on Russia right across the Bering Straits. I mean, just incredible decision it became. At the time, as I said, they thought it was foolish, but it became probably one of the biggest pieces of real estate or purchases of real estate since they bought Manhattan from the natives back in whenever that was, in the very, very early days of the American colony. Well, let's talk a little bit about Vice President Biden. Apparently, there's a woman in Arizona. I think that's where it is, Nevada or Arizona. I think it's Arizona. Her name is Lucy Flores, who at one time was a candidate for something in Arizona, yeah, one of the state position, not governor, but attorney general or something like that. And, you know, she was there and running for office. And, you know, the vice president came to help her with the campaign. I think he was there to do more than just her campaign. He was there maybe to help the Democrats in Arizona in 2014. 2014 turned out to be a very bad year for the Democrats, as you may remember. Anyway, so she alleges in a letter that she just wrote and published that Vice President Biden came to this meeting and was touching her in a very inappropriate way. That, you know, she's standing there and all of a sudden somebody's touching her and she's saying to herself, why is the Vice President of the United States touching me like this? It's a very interesting letter. You ought to take a look at it. I have a post coming out Sunday morning about this if you have not seen the letter. But she became very upset with the vice president, apparently, and said she couldn't wait to get off stage. Well, to make a long story short, Lucy Flores was never elected to office. Vice President Biden, of course, is now thinking about running for president. I think there's a pretty good chance that he will, by the way, run for president. And now this story comes out. But the vice president says he doesn't remember anything. And, yeah, that's possible. He meets a lot of people. But this is, I think, indicative of what is wrong with the Democrat Party. Look, I wasn't there, and Biden does sometimes have a tendency to get very, very touchy with people. I don't think it's something bad. I don't think he means anything bad by it. And I guarantee you he's not going to be touching any women this year if he runs for president. But, you know, we've all seen movies of this. I remember the time that he was touching that lady when her husband was being sworn in for the Obama cabinet, and he sure seemed like he was having a good time, and this poor woman was sitting there. I don't think she was having a good time. But he has a tendency of doing these things, but I really don't think that this makes him a bad person or a sexual predator or anything like that. But the Democratic Party has reached a level of insanity that anything like this before would have probably just been cast aside, and maybe an apology would have been all you needed. But now this has become, you know, they now have these standards of behavior that make it impossible for a man to run for office. Basically, that's what it's down to. And who exactly put this story out there, I don't know. Obviously, it's someone who is trying to hurt the Joe Biden campaign, because this never came out before. All of a sudden this comes out. Makes you wonder how many more letters like this will be published, because, as I say, Vice President Biden does have touchy hands, you know, when he's out in public and there are women around. But, again, I wouldn't get that worked up about it. I have never thought of Vice President Joe Biden as anything more than just a happy guy who likes to, you know, likes to show a little emotion when he's around people. I would never consider him a sexual predator or anything like that. But it's a different standard now. It's a different standard in the Democrat Party. And I tell you, I don't know anything about Beto's background. I don't know anything about Bernie Sanders' background. But they better be careful, because they're going to dig up stuff about them, just like they're doing now with Vice President Biden. But I think at the end of the day, it says a lot about what is happening in the Democrat Party. And if more stuff like this comes out about Vice President Biden, he's not going to get it. He's simply not going to get it, because the people will jump on him, and he's going to have to pull out probably, I would assume. But anyway, that's what's happening in the Democrat Party. I think the one person who must be enjoying all of this, of course, is President Trump. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you the next time. Bye-bye, everybody.